BBC Five Live.
Time for Up All Night's tech and gadget phone-in. As usual, I'm joined by Fevzi Turkut from the website gadgetdetective.com. If you're struggling with your screen, fiddling with your phone, you can get involved between now and 3.30 here on Up All Night. You can call us now on 08085 909 693. Calls are free from mobiles and landlines. You can text 85058. Texts are charged at your standard message rate. And you can also email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. We are also at 5Live, at BBC 5Live. On social media. Hi there, Fevzi.
Morning.
Hi. We've had quite an interesting news story in the past hour or so, which I know you're quite keen to talk about as well. Facebook is planning to share Russia-linked political adverts with investigators. This could be quite something, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's about 3,000 adverts that they took money for from either from Kremlin-linked Russian businesses or interestingly, former Soviet states. It's obviously they're handing over the information as part of the Mueller investigation. Interesting that they take the money in the first place. The nature of the adverts were not specifically to support a specific candidate, but they were adverts designed, I think one could characterize them as designed to cause unrest. I mean, there were things like messages about immigration, not very positive ones, let's say. Mm. You could probably draw your own conclusions about which candidate that might then have favored. But they posted inflammatory information on various hot topics, but including immigration as well. And it's just interesting what companies will take advertising money for, because Facebook, it was only a few days ago that they the whole thing about Facebook and the reason why they gather so much information about us, each of us, is that it then allows them to sell highly targeted marketing. So it's not just, you know, people within a certain age range or people who live in a certain geographic location. One of the targeted areas that they were accepting money for adverts for was, and I quote, people who hate Jews.
Right.
You know, I think Facebook has something to answer for when it takes advertising that's targeted in that way and in other similarly disgusting ways. Why are they doing this? Why are social media companies doing that? I'm always the first one who stands up and says, you know, we can't expect too much of social media. They are the conduit, they're not a publisher in this traditional sense. However, it does seem that, you know, there is a line that shouldn't be crossed, and probably that it's there and thereabouts, isn't it?
Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg himself says that tech companies are changing, in his words. I suppose that's a bit of an about turn, isn't it? Because previously, like as you've just mentioned, they sort of mentioned themselves as tech companies and publishers rather than media organisations to try to potentially, I suppose, you know, wheedle out of responsibility.
Yeah, and it is difficult because they are clearly not a conduit in the way that BT providing a phone line is a conduit. You know, no one would seek to hold BT responsible for what someone said over one of their lines, but at the same time, they're not a traditional publisher where they originate the content either. So there's all this content that goes up and doesn't come down unless someone complains about it. And it's not just Facebook that has this problem. You know, Twitter and others are similar. Increasingly, these companies are trying to develop artificial intelligence that can spot terrorist information, you know, bomb making data or whatever it is, and bring it down, or certain inflammatory remarks. And the difficulty is twofold. One, it's been technological, and as I say, they're working on artificial intelligence. And the reason it's artificial intelligence is because you couldn't employ enough people to read the stuff and take it down. It's just, you know, there's just too many messages every second. You'd have to have millions of staff just trying to read through it, and probably they still couldn't do it. So they'll try and get artificial intelligence to sort it out. The other issue that tech companies have been aware of, and I think rightly so, is the issue of free speech as well. Now, there are always limits to free speech. You know, shouting fire in a theatre is, you know, a limit of free speech, but at the same time, they do have to be careful about acceding to the demands of governments about unacceptable material, because there is again a line to be drawn, and the question is, who should be drawing that line? Companies like Facebook have thousands of pages rules, effectively internal rules about what can and cannot be posted to Facebook, and they're complicated and somewhat contradictory in places as well. So should it be left to each company to come up with their own rules? Should these companies accede to the demands of governments? What if governments don't like political statements that are unpleasant but would perhaps come under free speech in some societies? So they've been reticent about that as well, but obviously in the current environment where we're getting terrorist bombs going off and so forth, and it's thought that people are either being radicalized via the internet or getting skills via the internet, then they are under some pressure to do something. And I think Theresa May recently said that she thought that things should be removed, or companies should be fined if they didn't remove material within 2 hours of it appearing.
Mm. Do you think the threat of a fine would scurry them along a bit, that if the fines were big enough?
They would have to be huge, wouldn't they, with a company like Facebook? Because, the typical fine would be pocket change to a company like Facebook or Google or what have you. I think they're more worried about being seen as being, enemies of being on the wrong side of the argument, as it were. Yeah. And Apple has had this problem, hasn't it, when law enforcement authorities have lent on Apple to unlock phones and all the rest of it and weaken its software. And Apple, in my view, rightly has said, if we weaken the software so you can get into it, it will be weakened for everyone else. So when Amber Rudd, for example, says that WhatsApp should be able to unencrypt messages, that means that encryption will be weak throughout, and therefore the encryption that we all rely on in our day-to-day lives for our banking and everything else, if you weaken it for one, it's weakened for everyone. And I think then that's unproductive as well, because where terrorists are using encrypted messaging platforms like WhatsApp, if those platforms have backdoors built into them so governments can get into them, then what will happen is that terrorists will move off those platforms into either less well-known platforms or less well-regulated platforms, or they'll even write the software themselves, because encryption is just mathematics and the equations are known. It is not rocket science to encrypt messages and build a secure platform. So then what will happen is all these miscreants will go underground. They'll still be messaging in a encrypted way. We just won't even know that they're doing it, because at least when they do it, for example, on WhatsApp, we might not know the contents of the messages, but we know who is messaging whom and when, and we can still build all that metadata, that sort of 3D graph of who knows who and who contacts who. And you'll lose that if they're pushed underground. And the side effect will be the rest of us will all be spied on by the state, or potentially so. So some of the demands made by the government, I don't think would achieve what they think they will achieve, whereas others seem to be, to me, common sense. I mean, I think in this day and age, there used to be something called, I think, the Anarchist Handbook about 30 or 40 years ago, and it had that sort of information in it, but people had to seek it out and, go and buy it and so forth. Now it's a couple of taps on a search engine and it's there.
And there it all is. There it all is. It's a real can of worms, technologically speaking, isn't it, I suppose?
It is, but it raises questions about free speech and, who should be setting the rules. So, in broadcast, we have, things like Ofcom and BBC has its own regulations and so forth. But with the internet companies, they're global communications platforms. Who should be in charge of them? Who should set those standards and how should they be regulated? Those are very big questions. And the difficulty is that if you try and create those rules, in this environment, you get the equivalent of the Dangerous Dogs Act, knee-jerk legislation that isn't always very well thought out.
Well, yeah, that's quite a highbrow start to our phone, isn't it?
Won't do that again.
If you've just got a problem with your laptop, please just give us a call, 08085 909 693. You can text us on 85058. You can email upallnight at bbc.co.uk. We are at BBC5Live on social media as well, should that talk of social media not have put you off. Plenty of time to take your calls between now and around 3.30. We'd really love to hear from you, but... we've had a great starting question to start us off on the text, Fevzy, from Simon in Doncaster. This must be one that has a lot of people going. He says, is there a device to play back the old Hi8 camcorder tapes from, because his old camera has died and he's got no way to play them. And this is the backwards compatibility issue is one we revisit many times. But yeah. But this one, any sort of devices to play Hi8 camcorder tapes?
Yeah, I mean, the only things that will play back Hi8 camcorder tapes are either Hi8 camcorders or Hi8 video playback units. I mean, specifically built for that unit. And as far as I'm aware, they're not made anymore. And therein lies the problem with this sort of format redundancy. So either... you hire a machine if you haven't got one and you transfer off the stuff yourself, or you take it to a specialist company who does exactly this for a living and will transfer, you know, almost any format to any other format. And it's important that people do that, because particularly, you know, with tape-based recordings, they will deteriorate. I mean, even if a tape is digital in format, for example, it will still suffer dropout of magnetic particles, and it will still be susceptible to magnetic fields in, you know, weakening the recording over a period of time. So that's the same with, you know, VHS videotapes or SVHS or Hi8 or you know, any of the other formats that were around. I think you have to think about how many recordings you have. If you've got one or two prize recordings, then it can be more cost effective to pay someone to do it for you. And also, if it's something very special, you want them to a professional job, because they can not only copy it over, but they can remove some of the extraneous noise and tidy it up for you. If, however, you've got, you know, tens of hours of the stuff or even hundreds of hours of the stuff, then it's probably worth, you know, looking up a well-known auction website and buying yourself a Hi8 playback unit and just make sure it's got the right connectivity. You'll then need a device to capture that video and audio and record it safely. And you record it in a digital format, and it should be recorded as highest quality as possible, and then keep backups of it. So, you know, have at least three copies of it, and one of those copies on a separate site. So this is the concepts of backup technology anyways, that, you know, you don't just back up to a hard disk drive inside, say, your laptop, and then a second hard drive just sitting next to your laptop, because if there's a theft or a fire or a flood, then both your copies could go. But if you upload one, say, into the cloud, or put it on an external drive and, you know, give it to your mum to look after or whatever it is, you know, in another location, that is, you know, you have to do that, but it is a problem. You know, there's all these formats are dying out, and historians are finding this now as well, because, you know, historians that would look at photographs of, you know, 100 years ago, you know, 100 years ago, a photo was a photo, and other than sort of fading, there wasn't too much of a problem with them. But nowadays, you know, it doesn't take 100 years, it takes 10 years for a format to become redundant, and after a while, you know, actually impossible to play back. I mean, there are, you know, 5 1/4 inch floppy disks and even 8-inch floppy disks that stored information.
Yes.
There are all sorts of weird magneto-optical formats. I've got a camcorder that would record to some sort of DVD type disc, but okay, it wasn't a conventional disc. So and then people had things stored on things called zip drives.
Yes,
you know,
I remember those.
Which were like super floppies, and in fact there was another one called, I think, was called a super floppy. So these formats that we sort of forget, you know, it's very difficult. You look at these things, and even things like compact flash are becoming a little bit niche, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And it will go the same way. All our USB drives, you know, we're changing USB to USB-C. They will start becoming more difficult, not as difficult when they're in digital format, but more so. So So having given the long answer, the short answer is, if you've got a few hours of it, look at a company that does it, you know, professionally, look at the reviews, make sure that they're well thought of. If you've got a load of them, then perhaps consider buying or renting a machine to do it.
Yeah, Lex has texted a reply to this one on 85058. He says about those Hi8 camcorder tapes, there are companies that can transfer these to USB flash disk for you, usually quite cheap, he says, about sort of £20 per hour of video. So that doesn't sound too bad, does it, I suppose? Like you say,
not too bad unless you've got hundreds of hours of video and you don't know what you've got on it. So if you haven't labeled your tapes either, you know, that can be problematic. But yeah, it can be done. I'm not sure that I'd necessarily want it on a USB stick. I think I'd want it burnt onto a disk of some sort and then maybe make copies of that or be given, you know, different formatted copies of that.
I suppose the $64,000 question is any sort of memory format likely to have greater longevity than others? You say that the USB sticks are kind of, they might be on their way out now, but if you burnt it to, say, a CD or a DVD, would that potentially last a bit longer?
Yeah, so there's two issues with that. One is how long the bits last before they fade or become corrupted, and the other is how long a format will be common currency or easy to play back from. So what I had in mind when I said not a USB stick is that, you know, USB sticks may be overwritten easily, whereas an accidentally overwritten, whereas a disk is burnt in, and when the disk is finalized, it's not possible to you know, overwrite it, at least by accident. But I wouldn't rely on any single format anymore, and I would have files, you know, in non-physical format, have the files sitting on a hard drive somewhere as well. So then you're not faced with a physical problem. You're faced, well, of course, if the hard drive becomes difficult to use, that's the other thing. But at least you've got the option of sort of converting the file formats into something more commonly used. But I think what it means is we have to do digital audits of our media every few years, at least, you know, maybe every 5 years, look at what's dear to us and how it's stored and think about, you know, do we have sufficient backups of it and do we have to think about moving it onto another medium?
I suppose we've also got the reason why British laws are written on vellum, haven't we? Do you know vellum, yes, is this,
yes,
goat skin
stuff. They're not all written on vellum anymore. No. You know, the commons are moving, and the lords and the commons are moving. But yeah, it's because it's very expensive to write onto vellum. But you know,
but it lasts. Come
the apocalypse, British laws will still be readable and enactable.
Absolutely, absolutely. 08085 909 693 for your answers to your tech questions. I'm delighted to say Christine in Portsmouth joins us. Hi there, Christine.
Hiya.
Hi. I understand you're after a very ordinary phone. Talk to Febsy. What would you like to say?
I've got an old, oldish Samsung Slide, which has a camera. It's not a smartphone, just an ordinary phone.
Yep.
There must be a name for those phones, but
they're called feature phones.
Feature phones.
Yes, or dumb phones if you're being uncharitable. Yeah.
I've also got one that's slightly newer. I bought a few years ago. It's a Nokia X1, and it'll deal with two SIM cards. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has a radio, but no camera.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one has a camera, but no radio on it.
Yes.
So can you recommend me one that will do the both?
Okay, well, all right. So radios built into telephones tend to be FM radios.
Yeah.
They tend not to have DAB or anything, so they have their limitations, and often they will only work when you've got the headphones plugged in, because the headphones...
That's exactly right, but I don't find that a problem.
No, because I'm just saying that the headphones will then act as the antenna.
Right.
So there's two ways, I guess, of getting radio on a phone. One is that way, where you've got an FM receiver built into it. The other is to stream radio stations digitally, you know, so you use data on the device, and it can be done in that way. The benefit of doing it in that way is that you're then not limited to stations for which you can receive an FM signal, but you can receive things from, so you can get, for example, BBC stations from all over the country, not just for your local area.
Right. I don't mind being limited.
No, okay, well, fair enough. I would look at some of the phones from a company called Doro, D-O-R-O. I think they're Swedish, I can't remember now, but they specialize in phones that are, the features that they have are easy to use, and they do both feature phones and easy to use smartphones, and they there's a whole range of them. So the smartphones are easy to set up, easy to use, do have cameras built into them. I think some of them also do have radios. I'm pretty sure they do. So you've got a choice of sort of the flip phone type design, you know, the clamshell phone that opens up, yeah, and you get a big keyboard. The benefit of those being that, you know, when it's in your bag, you're not accidentally pressing buttons in, you know, yeah, making calls. And the smartphones are just kind of easy to use. They have basic functions. They don't go over the top like, you know, a top end Samsung with loads of features that you might never use. Mm-hmm. So you could look at something like a Doro 8030, which is a smartphone, or a Doro 6520.
Yeah, but with a smartphone, do you have to be online or something?
It depends what you mean. You don't have to have internet at home. But you can get a SIM. You'll need a SIM for it. The SIM that you have may just allow you to make phone calls and send texts, or it could allow you a certain amount of data usage every month as well. And with data use
issued every month,
So you can have an allocation of data, and data is what you use if you want to, for example, access a website over the internet or access a radio.
No, I don't want any of that,
yeah,
to be honest.
Okay, well then I would look at a Doro feature phone. Look at something, let me just see, here we go, 6620.
What nationality did you say they were?
I think they're Swedish, but they're Swedish, very good. Yeah. What their specialism is to make the phones easy to use, okay. I'm not saying this applies to you in any way, but for
it
example
does.
no but it's also that the buttons are bigger, the screens are clearer, yeah. The setup is often done in plain English, so it'll actually speak to you in sentences and say, mm-hmm, you know, it'll ask you certain questions in plain English about what you want,
right,
and you can set it up in that way. So you know, they are popular for that reason. They might not have, you know, the very sharpest camera or, you know, the very highest tech, but they are very usable. And I think that they're quite unique in doing that. You know, that's their whole raison d'etre. So if you look them up, D-O-R-O.
I will, yeah.
You can buy theirs. Their phones are available in the high street. I mean,
the shops, yeah?
Yeah, if you look at sort of major department stores, for example, never knowingly undersold, they sell them. You know, lots of other people sell them as well.
They've got a website as well, Febzy. I'm just looking at their website now. It's all various different models.
Is it doro.co.uk?
That's it, yeah, absolutely.
So they have a series called Easy Phones as well. So I would look at the feature phones. If you're not interested in internet, you don't need the ones.
No, not really. It's a feature phone that I want.
Yeah, and also that means
I've ever had, and that's what I'm happy with.
And it means it's got real buttons on it as well. Which again, by the way, for people who are partially sighted as well, some people prefer the a phone with real buttons.
I do deal with real buttons actually.
Yeah. So and you can still get the camera, and you can still get the radio in there as well.
I might be able to get one with them, or I should be able to get one with both a camera and a radio. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks very much indeed for your call. Christine in Portsmouth there, talking to Febzy on all things tech here on Up All Night. She called on 08085 909 693. You can as well talk to Febzy with all your tech questions answered for around about the next hour. You can also text us on 85058. You can email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. And we are on social media at BBC5Live. We're talking all things tech with Febzy Turkout from GadgetDetective.com between now and 3:30. Plenty of stuff coming in. 08085 909 693 for your calls. 85058 for your texts. Email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. And we are at BBC5Live on social media as well. We often talk, Febzy, about browsers. And Helen from Bournemouth has been in touch on the text. I hasten to say she may have committed one of your cardinal sins. She was told Google Chrome is not supported by Windows XP, so she deleted it. But now she hasn't got a browser on her old computer. She asks, please, can you let me know which browser I can upload? how I might do that without a browser in the first place. And of course, this follows on from things we've spoken about in the past, where your recommendation is to always have at least two browsers on your computer just in case this kind of thing happens.
Yeah, and particularly if one browser becomes faulty and you need to download a fix to it or an alternative, what are you going to do that with if you haven't got a browser on there? I mean, there are ways around it. You can install a browser having set it up on another computer, so you take a USB drive and copy it across and install it that way, so you don't have to download the new browser. But that's typically how we get software on our computers. We download it. The alternatives are the Microsoft offerings or Firefox. So Firefox is a good browser. I like Firefox because Chrome is a good browser. It's a good lightweight browser, and it's well supported. It is a Google product, and as we've sort of alluded to in the past, Google's way of making money is to collect information about us, and what better way of doing that than looking at how we browse?
Yeah.
Many people are quite comfortable with that, and it is a good browser if that's not a concern for you. Firefox, on the other hand, doesn't have that same sort of business model, and therefore will arguably do more. If you have the pleasure of using an Apple machine, however, Safari is a very good browser. And I'm not sure that we are talking about an Apple computer, but just to broaden the discussion a bit. Apple have been attracting some fire from advertising companies recently because it said that the new version of their Safari browser will by default stop companies looking at where we've surfed before. So one website won't as easily be able to see where we've surfed previously. And you may be aware of that. As you surf the internet, you might see, let's say you go to, for argument's sake, Amazon, and you look up a chainsaw or something like that. As you then go across other websites, you'll see adverts for chainsaws popping up. And the way that that's done is that they put what are called tracking cookies, which are little files that are stored by websites on your hard drive. And that's not in and of itself a bad thing, because let's say you use a particular website regularly and you make choices about which parts of the site you most commonly use and how you want it to look. Those sort of setup information is stored in a cookie. But if that cookie is then read by another website, then they can see what you've been doing on those other websites, which gives rise to privacy concerns. And therefore Safari by default stops that from happening, or at least tries to stop it from happening. Firefox has got a good reputation. Microsoft Internet Explorer sort of It lost its reputation. It was the king of all of this for many, many years, but it's sort of less well thought of these days.
Is that just because it's really slow?
It's partly because it's slow. It's partly because of poor adherence to standards, so certain web pages didn't look as good. And mostly it's because there were security problems with it. And you'll find with all browsers that their reputations go in waves, and deservedly so, that sometimes they're kind of ahead of the game on things like security, and other times they seem to lag behind. And it's a similar thing with antivirus software as well. Norton Internet Security at the moment, and for some years now, I think it's been a good choice. There was a time when it was very much not a good choice. You can't form a fixed opinion of these things. They will change over time, which, by the way, is another argument for having more than one browser on your system, because if you keep up with it and just notice the features and the plugins and so forth that are available, and then if there are particular security problems, you can just stop using it and you've got your other browser there. So I would say, Helen, look at Firefox, look at if you don't want to use Chrome or feel you can't use Chrome, then Microsoft Internet Explorer is also an option. If you're running Windows 10, there's also a very fast Microsoft browser called Edge.
Is that better than Internet Explorer?
It's faster. It's not as well supported, so it doesn't have the same support of third-party plugins for it to make it useful. So if you don't find that there's anything missing, then it's a good choice. If, however, your favourite plugin is not available for it, then that could be a deal breaker.
0808 5 909 693 for your calls tonight, 85058 for your texts, at BBC 5 Live on social media, and you can email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. Edward is in County Durham. Hello there, Edward.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Morning, Edward.
The question is that about 5-10 years ago, you used to be able to get a VHS machine, which would you could transfer your videotapes onto a DVD.
Yes.
And sometimes CD. The last one I heard of, I think, was a Daewoo about 5 years ago. Is there any that's available at the moment, and perhaps a separate system where I could do my old LPs to CD?
Yeah. Okay. So, Edward, it's a very good question. Well, it is a good question because it's something that a lot of us are facing. A few months ago, it was announced, I think the last manufacturer of VHS video recorders announced that they were no longer going to make them. And the reason is they couldn't get the parts to make them anymore, so they stopped. It's not going to be, you can still find VHS video recorders knocking around. You'll struggle to find a new one, but there are, you know, perfectly serviceable ones that you can still buy. Getting one that does the recording onto a disc as well will be a little bit harder, and is not necessary, because actually, by and large, the ones that had two types of drive in them, you know, a VHS tape playback unit and a recording disc unit, they tended to be a bit poor quality. I mean, not all of them, but they were normally built to a price which wasn't much more than a straightforward VHS recorder. So you would find that the VHS playback and the recording capability were not great. What you can do is buy a VHS video recorder, or again, rent one if you only need it for transfer purposes, and then connect it using, you know, cables to a recording device, and that can be a hard disk recorder or it can be a DVD recorder, what have you. So you can do it that way. You don't have to have the two built into one, and there are advantages to not having that. So that's what I would suggest you do, again, unless of course it's only a very limited amount of material that you need to transfer, in which case you may just, if it's a one-off exercise and it's not a lot of hours of video, then you may pay someone to do it for you, and there are many companies that do that and do a good job of it. In terms of did you say transferring vinyl to CD?
Yes, I was wanting to do I've got like the original Beatles LPs when they came out and things like that, but I've got tremors, so I can't play my CDs now. Some of my vinyl now, because I would damage the whole lot. So I thought if I transferred them onto a CD as opposed to buying them new from the shop.
Well, there are so you can do that, first of all, and there are two approaches. There are record players or turntables that have that analog to digital circuitry built into them, and then they just have a USB output.
I don't have a computer or laptop or anything like that.
Okay. Is this a large record collection, Edward?
Yes.
It is large. Okay. It might be a case of getting someone to help you with this, or you know, hiring someone. Or what you could do is you could get, so there's a turntable called an Audio Technica ATLP5, and that combines a good quality turntable and a digital output as well, and then you can connect that digital output to a CD recorder, and you can do it without a computer. This is normally done with a computer because it allows you to tidy it up, edit it, top and tail it, get rid of any surface noise and all the rest of it. If you go straight to recorder, you'll lose the ability to do that. You will still get the recordings, but you'll lose the ability to do that. But you know, a decent turntable to do that is not cheap. The other alternative is you use your existing turntable. You've got a working turntable at the moment, Edward?
Yes.
Right. So,
but as I say, I don't do it because I would damage the records, dropping the needle, and if I was trying to select tracks.
Yeah. So what you can do for the purposes of you know, just transferring it once, and again, you might need to get help with this so you don't damage your vinyl in the process, but you can buy a box that will convert the output of a standard turntable into digital form and then record that onto another device.
My apologies for interrupting. I don't get out and I don't have anybody that could get anything for me or help. It would have been a case of like getting someone to buy it and bring it to me, and then I thought, well, just plug it in and put the record on and get the thing at the other end. And I've got a couple of hundred VHS tapes.
I mean, to do this, you will need the right equipment, and you will need the ability to, you know, set up your VHS and set up your vinyl and play it without damaging it. So, you know, particularly if you're suffering from tremors, you will need at some point someone to come in and help you with that. The alternative is, you know, we find a company to do it, but that's not going to be cheap if there's a lot of vinyl to be done. Or you go the other route and you don't actually make copies of your vinyl. You either buy CDs or you subscribe to a streaming service which will have the bulk of what you have on there. Is your vinyl collection particularly esoteric, or is it, you know...
Is it what?
Is it unusual in any way? Or
no.
So another solution to this might be to subscribe to a streaming service.
I don't want to get... I don't have any of that kind of stuff. So it's just I would be able to pass, with not getting out and not seeing anybody, I'd be able to pass more of my time to put my vinyl and the VHS tapes on something like that and just plug in and play.
I understand. Edward, look, I think you're going to need some help with this one way or the other. If you're happy to do it, can I suggest leave your phone number or a method of contacting you with the producers here, and I will pick this up during the course of the coming week and try and talk you through what we can do to help you, because it's clear to me you're going to need help from a person, and you're going to need some more equipment. If you're going to make copies of your own stuff, and I'm just wondering if that's necessarily the best way to go, or whether we should look at, you know, trying to get you access to that same material in some other way. But if you're willing, Edward, leave your number.
Okay. Well, the station's got my number. Would that be all right?
Yeah, they can email it to me if you're all right with that.
Oh. Okay, the way the telephone is set up with BT, it goes into the answer mode, and then I ring the person back.
That's no problem, and I won't block my number either. So hopefully, it will allow my call through.
It's got that new 1572 like Guardian thing on, so yeah. I don't know whether that would actually come through to me or not. It's so new, I haven't even.
Yeah, I think if I don't block my number, I should be able to leave a message.
That would be fine.
I mean, if you had email, I'd ask you to email me, but I'm guessing you don't use email.
The only thing I've got is my BT landline and the DAB radio.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
Edward, we will find a way, definitely.
I will find a way of contacting you using that number, Edward.
Thank you very much. Indeed.
Cheers, Edward.
It.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much indeed for your call. That's Edward in County Durham there. He called on 08085 909 693, and you can too, to talk to Fevzy, all things tech, between now and 3:30 here on Up All Night. 85058 for your texts. I had quite a few texts tonight as well. Let's just scroll down here. Reasonable...